Hi.
This is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information. We give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. We have an interesting and exciting show today. Information that I really believe you might not be aware of, but yet it affects every part of our life and health. So please get your paper and pencil. I'm with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
We're here, and we are going to be introducing a guest. Carol, could you introduce him to us?
Oh, it would be my pleasure. I'd like to introduce to our audience Dr. Chris Miletus. Chris is a naturopath. He's from Beaverton, Oregon, and he has been on the conference circuit, as I have been, going to many, many conferences. Often he's a speaker. He's been a Dean of Naturopathic Medicine. He's written 16 books and hundreds of scientific articles. On his website, he has this as his byline, Changing World's Health, One Person at a Time.
I love that.
Isn't that wonderful? It's right in tune with our program, Taking Care of Your Health. One person at a time, ourselves. We've asked Chris to come here today because he is so informed on so many topics, but the one we thought we would like to talk about this week is nitric oxide, an elusive molecule in our body that's oh so powerful. So we'd like to welcome Chris to our show today and tell us, what is this molecule called?
This mysterious...
And what does it do? Where does it come from? And why do we want it?
Well, thank you for having me, and love to share the concept of nitric oxide, something that actually started our lives, that actually was involved with implantation before we were even realized as human beings. We actually had nitric oxide working on behalf of our moms and dads. And so nitric oxide is a substance, a nitrogen and oxygen molecule, that actually got the Nobel Prize. Three individuals shared the Nobel Prize for the clinical application of nitric oxide. So if one was to Google nitric oxide, you come up with all kinds of interesting tidbits. But if you go to the medical literature, boy, oh boy, is an exciting place to look. And that's where I like to live, is in the medical literature. So nitric oxide is a substance we make every day of our lives. As I mentioned, it's at play before we were even born in our lives, but unfortunately it diminishes as we get older. In fact, by the age of 40 or 50, our nitric oxide levels are sometimes as low as half of what they used to be.
Really?
And I often give an example to my patients over the last 28 years that nitric oxide is like an irrigation system, and it helps vasodilate, helps expand our blood vessels. And imagine if you had a garden hose, and it was a 1/4-inch garden hose. Now you had a garden hose that was half an inch. Well, we know the half an inch garden hose will need a nozzle because there won't be very much pressure. Well, that's our blood pressure, and you have higher blood pressure, then of course a more expanded blood vessel or larger garden hose could actually lower pressure. Whereas if you have, of course, a very narrow garden hose and not enough nitric oxide, and if that's the cause of the problem, then of course nitric oxide can be important. But we also know nitric oxide has three components to it. So once again, made in our body every day, diminishing with aging. But nitric oxide is known as eNOS, iNOS, and as well as nNOS. So that's inducible nitric oxide, endothelial nitric oxide, and neuronal nitric oxide. But for the conversation today, just nitric oxide, not to be confused with the humorous topic of laughing gas or nitrous oxide, a different substance. So with nitric oxide, what I always like to tell my patients is we're not testing, we're guessing. Whether that's whether or not we're anemic, whether or not we have enough hormones. So you can actually test to see whether or not your nitric oxide levels are optimal. And it's with all things, whether it be vitamin D, zinc, or whatever, you want to make sure you're actually at optimal levels. So nitric oxide is a hot topic, an important topic, and something that your body allocates energy to make and to sustain to the best of its ability every day of your life.
Now, they talk about nitric oxide. They talk about reduction in low amounts. You have oxidation of LDLs or your cholesterol, the bad cholesterol that they say. They talk about it, how it dilates the blood vessels. And well, you're saying something. You're saying that it goes down as we age. Well, we consider increased blood pressure in older people a natural component of aging. So they also talk about it's a free radical. It's a important free radical. And it reduces multiplication of smooth muscle. And it stops the stickiness of blood. So where should we begin? You know, it's for heart. We know that the most of the NO, which is a gas, is made in the brain. It's the highest amount in the body. The brain makes the most of it. So where do you want to go, and how do we want to look at this molecule that's been so elusive to us until just recently?
Well, I think what my approach with my patients, and I am right near Intel and Nike campus, International Nike campus. I'm very fortunate and blessed to have super smart patients. And sometimes they have Googled so much, they should have an honorary degree for whatever their level of health is. And I mean that sincerely. Super exceptionally bright people, and they have gone deep into the weeds on their health conditions. When it comes to nitric oxide, I usually like to keep it fairly simple because when I was in conventional medical school, MD medical school, before I went to naturopathic medicine, then I took a sabbatical, never went back to my allopathic roots, my MD roots. But one of my professors shared this, and I think all the audience can appreciate this, is that if we're really good at what we do, we'll be able to convey that content of what our jobs are and how we get them done to virtually anybody. So our professor at the time was our professor of clinical physical diagnosis. And he says, I could bring a plumber in or an electrician. And she or he can go ahead and use their jargon, their shop talk, and they'll tell you how they wire or plumb your home. Uh-huh. If they're really good at their craft, you will actually leave knowing how to wire or plumb your house. So I think that what you do so brilliantly, Carol, is you translate science into English. So I'm hoping to keep it very scientific. But yep. Also for even my doctor friends out there that are listening to this show, because I know you have a huge listening audience, is that we all have to, even when we go to these big conferences where you and I speak in front of hundreds and sometimes thousands of doctors, they still on Monday morning have to convert and converse with what did they learn over the weekend that helps patient X, Y, or Z feel better. So I think I like to say that nitric oxide diminishes with age. We can do things, which we'll chat about, to improve and support our natural levels of healthy optimal nitric oxide. And also we can test, which we'll chat about too. I think the other exciting thing about nitric oxide is that it diminishes. So that doesn't sound very exciting, Chris. But certain other things happen to also diminish with aging, our levels of energy. And you can say, well, the people get older. They're, uh-huh. You know, my father-in-law from Oklahoma would call it old-timer's disease. Uh-huh. And not to be a play on Alzheimer's. He said, well, you're getting old. But when I was 25 years old, new to the family, I said, oh, they're so full of it. Now that I'm getting a little older, I'm saying, I guess I am slowing down a little bit. Not too much, hopefully, but a little bit. But now you think about, why do we get tired? Or why do we get more worn out? So nitric oxide is one of them because that helps nourish and support our body. It irrigates the tissues of trillions of cells. And you brought up the brain. As we sit here, our brain consumes about 20% of our blood sugar and 20% of our oxygen. Now, that's pretty amazing since it only weighs about 2% of our body weight. So that's pretty compelling. So it's no wonder we need a lot of oxygen to our brain, and nitric oxide helps with vasodilation. Plus, we need to have, of course, good circulation in our carotid arteries. One of the things we know never to do is rub both sides of our neck at the same time because you block off blood supply to our brain. And so we have to have oxygen, we have to have glucose. But then if you think about nitric oxide and what it's doing and what's happening at the same time in our body. So I'm 55 years young or old, depends on the day. And this year, I think I'm on the older side of things. It's been quite the year. And so what's interesting is what else drops time? So nitric oxide, but then also ATP. ATP is our currency for energy in our body. We make ATP every second, every millisecond in our body. When we were younger, so let's say 30 years old, we made about 65 kilograms, which are up in Canada. They can appreciate 65 kilos. And for those that are more U.S.-based, that's about 143 pounds. So we made 143 pounds of ATP per day when we were 30. Clearly, the cells, so that's a lot of ATP.
Yeah.
And that's it's astonishing. And so think about it, but for every decade from the age of 30, we lose 10% of our ability to make ATP. But now ATP allows my thumb to grow a thumbnail. It allows my hair, at least it used to grow hair. And so what's intriguing here is, well, if our cells, which make nitric oxide, don't have as much energy, that could be part and parcel of what's going on. And then to add to that, another molecule, and there will not be a special on Prozac when we're done. This is all going to be a positive thing. This is all workable and fixable. But you're saying, but this is just all bad news. 2020 has been bad enough. But the other molecule that drops up to 50% as we get older is NAD. It's actually, but not by chance, the molecule which actually supports ATP production. So we have a drop of up to 50% of NAD. We have a drop of about 50% for nitric oxide. We have a drop of 10% per decade on ATP. And now think about it. Every cell in our body, much like our cell phone, now we call them smartphones or whatever, but call them a cell phone. If our cell phones don't have a very good charge, how good are all the apps on our cell phone? Not good at all.
Lagging around.
Yeah, glorified paperweight, $1,000 paperweight or more, depending on how fancy your phone is. But so it's all about maintaining the charge, maintaining the circulation. And as we sit here talking, the average person, by the time the day is done with, will have had about 72 beats per minute on average, higher or lower. That means the heart beats 103,680 times a day, pumping blood through 60,000 miles of blood vessels. And once again, to pass through those blood vessels, you need to have that larger garden hose effect. You don't want to be really narrow garden hose where there's lots of pressure. You want to have a dilated garden hose, which allows for normal blood pressure or more normalized blood pressure. No medical claims being made here. But once again, this is one of many variables of why we get higher blood pressure, why we can get more heart disease. Or I just wrote an article that's going to be published in March on fertility and how nitric oxide levels help male and females with fertility issues. And there's some 12 million couples that nitric oxide is part of the equation of why they may or may not be as fertile as they would like.
Well, that's really interesting. I'd like to, since you entered into the sexual realm here, I'd like to ask you to talk about erectile dysfunction, which is rampant as men age and has a great deal to do with circulation. Can you describe what nitric oxide does for sexual activity? And how is it related to some of the drugs that are being prescribed for men with erectile dysfunction?
Great question. So the first book that I wrote that went international was in 1999 by HarperCollins, and it was called Better Sex Naturally. And sexual performance in both males and females is a barometer of one's overall health. Mental health, if you're depressed or anxious, not going to be in the mood. Neurological health, if you have a lower back issue that provides a nerve supply to the pelvis and the reproductive regions, you're not going to do very well. Or if you have cardiovascular or circulation issues, we're not going to have such a good, you know, response to an arousal moment. And so for whether it be pelvic congestion for a female and lubrication, or for a male, the erectile portion of the tissues, and same thing for female tissues and erectile tissues, we need to have adequate nitric oxide. So lots of times we go to our regular doc, and up here in Oregon, I can prescribe said erectile meds. And now the question is, I really want to know, why is a person having that problem? And if it can be solved by nourishing the body better and working on a similar but different mechanism, because each of the drugs have a patented mechanism. But my answer to prescribing is, when nature fails and natural approaches fail, then we flex my prescription pad. But I really want to say, well, if I give a person a pill that might help them for a couple, 2-3 hours, or maybe if I take an extended one as advertised for a weekend, but what happens when the weekend's over? You still have low nitric oxide levels. So you want to augment the nitric oxide, and for those that have nitric oxide insufficiency, and remembering that we're upwards of 50% lower than we ought to be or optimal by the age of 40 or 50, then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to create the solid foundation, and if I need a med, I'll do that, and then the med is supplementing the natural process as opposed to trying to substitute for a natural process.
Now, what is the cause of such a precipitous drop in nitric oxide and or ATP? Why are we seeing these kind of drops, 50% by the time they're 50?
That's an age-old question of why or why do I have to get old? And I think what happens, and you brought it up earlier in our conversation we were having, that, you know, there is oxidation of LDL. LDL is often considered the bad cholesterol. There are wear and tear in our body. There are all these processes. But the other thing is, as we get older, especially since we live in such a toxic world, all these extra toxins are also poisoning our chemistry. So if we drink out of plastic water bottles, we have phthalates. If we go to a masseuse and they use a cream or lotion that has parabens in it, or we use a body wash or makeups with parabens in them, these are poisoning our hormone pathways. So I think part of it is we're no longer in Kansas, and also air quality is worse. And many people that live in larger urban areas worry about, oh my goodness, look at the air pollution outside. But sometimes indoor air pollution is equal or worse than outdoor air pollution. And so it's really that we live in a toxic world. We do not fuel our bodies well. We're an overfed, undernourished society. They say that 87% of North Americans are low in one or more nutrients. Vitamin D, of course, tops the list, but there's so many more. And think about magnesium alone. I grew up, because once I'm 55 years old, I grew up with a milk mustache campaign, Got Milk. And if you're not familiar, those were billboards all over the place for younger listeners. And it's like, okay, well, we fell in love with calcium. And when I first graduated in 1992 from naturopathic medicine, we thought, okay, well, a 2-to-1 ratio of calcium to magnesium. And then we said, no, a 1-to-1 ratio between calcium and magnesium. And now we're saying really maybe 2 parts magnesium to 1 part calcium. And magnesium alone, which we usually don't get enough of in our diet, is actually necessary for over 300 different enzymes. Pathways in the body. That's biochemical pathways that depend upon magnesium. So I think if we were in ancient times, we walked wherever we needed to go or ride a horse. If we actually had fresher air, if everything by nature was organic because there's no GMO, there was no herbicides and pesticides like we know today, I think we would be much healthier and happier, and maybe we wouldn't see some of these premature drops. So some of the blue zones around the world, these are where people live to be centenarians over 100 years. They actually have clean and pristine lives and often healthier environments, with the exception of Loma Linda in California, which is actually a blue zone, but they don't necessarily have the freshest air being part of California. And I pick on California. I'm in Oregon. We share air. But it's like, but can our diet and lifestyle help us position ourselves in a position of power? And when it's all done and said with, can we say at least we did our best by our body?
Well, how can we do that? That's a burning question in my mind. So we want to help our body optimize all these things, the NO, the NAD, and the ATP. So what strategies, or how do we eat? What do we do to, go after this holy grail of holding back the aging tide with optimizing our ability to make those particular molecules that are so important to us?
Excellent question, and that is much like the riddle of the Sphinx, the age-long question. And for the audience, now that I mentioned the riddle of the Sphinx, and with my Greek name, Miletus, I have to share that riddle. And so what want on four legs in the morning, two legs at noon, three legs in the evening, and no legs at night? Humankind. Mm-hmm. Because we crawl, then we walk, and then we walk with a cane, and then, of course, we rested as our life suspended. But if you think about what can we do, well, food is our best medicine. It was Hippocrates that said that. At least he's given credit. Now, his wife might have given him some food, and he felt crummy after walking around in the Mediterranean. And he said, boy, I feel better. I said, and the wife probably said, I told you you'd feel better after you ate. Well, let me write that down. Who knows how it really happened. But, and it was, then it was Lucretius, the Roman philosopher, that said, what is food for some is poison for the others. And so if you're on the avocado craze and everybody's eating avocado, it might be good for 99% of people, but it might not be good to you or for you. And so listening to your body on those things. But when it comes to supporting nitric oxide food-wise, organic spinach, kale, arugula, and beets. And so, but once again, I say organic. And the reason is, if not, we're eating a lot of herbicides and pesticides. And for the listening audience that's not familiar with what's called the Dirty Dozen foods, which I know we are all very familiar with, the Dirty Dozen foods is a list of foods that are categorized every year by the environmentalworkinggroup.org, EWG.org. And you can also find the 15 clean foods. So because we all have budgets, we can't always necessarily buy organic. But if you say, okay, well, I'm at a market, I don't have enough money in my pocket, and so what are the 15 clean foods which are safer for me to eat if I can't buy organic? And then what are the 12 foods that you probably don't want to buy, for example, strawberries or spinach, if you can't buy them organic? And you'll find out in the Environmental Working Group, EWG.org. And so we want to eat the kale, the arugula, the bok choy, the leafy greens. Mom was right when we were growing up. You got to eat your vegetables. And so eating, so as Mom was right, once again, you got to eat those vegetables. And so eating those vegetables is critical because they help support nitric oxide. But because of the aging process and the cells themselves that don't make adequate mitochondrial energy, that's the ATP, doesn't have enough building blocks with NAD, for example, nicotinamide riboside, then we have to fuel the body on those levels too. But I like to use a supplement to supplement the good diet we were just describing. And then also I like to test myself and my patients with a very simple nitric oxide test strip that allows you to measure your saliva and say, am I dialed in? Kind of like if we were going to go for a long road trip, and life is sometimes quite long and sometimes arduous, and there might be big breaks between gas stations. We want to know if we've topped off our gas tank on a daily basis, and that's why testing for nitric oxide is important as well.
So I would like to just explain to the audience, put a little more emphasis on the importance of nitric oxide, because the brain depends on it. Our ability to learn is very much based on NO. Our memory is based on NO. Our recall is based on NO. And the less NO we have, or nitric oxide, the less those functions will happen. That's why the brain makes so much of it, so consistently. And in relationship to foods, there's two amino acids that assist in this process. And one is arginine, and the other is citrulline. And the arginine you find abundantly in nuts and seeds. And the citrulline, where would we get citrulline?
Ah, great question. One of the favorite places I find citrulline is watermelon.
Oh, I didn't know. No wonder I like it so much.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so no wonder we feel so good right after a nice picnic with watermelon. But that's where the spinach and the arugula and all those things come also into play as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, we are trying to nourish that. But you're 100% correct. Arginine is a building block without question. It feeds into the citrulline, which then feeds into the nitric oxide. So I usually, if I supplement with amino acids like citrulline for people that are weightlifting or doing, you know, extreme exercise, I'm always going to make sure, once again, we're measuring their levels. But this is where also the beets come in. And
oh,
the beets
exactly.
are a phenomenal source, and particularly a fermented beet.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'll supplement my patients' diets with a daily regime of nitric oxide, especially as they get older. Or like you said, what about cognitive functioning? And if you really go back to that circulation concept, you know, the, for the audience, we have the brain, 20% of oxygen, as we said, 20% of our blood sugar. But how do we get those amino acids like tyrosine that helps make dopamine, that makes norepinephrine and epinephrine, which is adrenaline, noradrenaline? Well, you need to have tyrosine, but it has to get to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, well, what about tryptophan? We think turkey, we think Thanksgiving, we think comfort foods, we think carbohydrates, but we also think tryptophan is made into 5-HTP, and 5-HTP is made into serotonin. That's our calm, chill, thoughtful, emotionally balanced part of us. And then ultimately, the serotonin migrates down to make melatonin, which is sleep, and is also a phenomenal antioxidant. But now those amino acids have to get to our brain, and it comes back to that wonderful circulation nitric oxide. And because our brain is so vascular and such a supercomputer, we have to make sure that the ATP, the NAD, and the nitric oxide all working in unison so that we can be everything we can be. And it's this year, we've had more people with psychotic breaks, nervous breakdowns, depression, and anxiety. So we have to make sure that that nitric oxide is working in the GI tract so we're absorbing our nutrients well. And when any of us are stressed out, our digestion is not nearly as well. We're not in what's called the optimal gastrocephalic brain, head. That part of things. So if we ever gone to a restaurant or even a movie or a large vending area, we smell the smells, then our mouth starts watering. But if you're stressed out, which most of us are these days, we're going to be clamping down our blood vessels. Our blood pressure is going to go up. We're not going to have the optimal digestion. And we're not even going to get the circulation that nitric oxide provides to the pancreas, to the small intestine, to our intestine. So even with my patients that aren't athletes, I'm using nitric oxide to augment my therapies. So if I'm working on gut health, I want to make sure nitric oxide's there. So the GI tract has circulation. If I'm working on mental health, as you've pointed out, with whether it be cognitive function and clarity and that ability to be the best that you can be, whether it be the job or whatever you're doing academically, you know, intellectually, that's important. Or maybe it's about joints. Are my nutrients, my glucosamine or my MSM or chondroitin or my essential fatty acids getting to my joints optimally? Well, once again, you have to have nitric oxide in circulation in order for that to work.
Now,
and it has an indirect relationship.
Now, how do we go about testing it? We know that NO has a very, very short half-life. It's seconds. And so that is one of the reasons why we weren't able to discover it until 1998, because it was such an elusive gas in our bodies. So what are we dealing with in terms of testing?
Well, in the ideal world, you go to a fancy lab and you have a probe put into you. Well, first off, a probe put into you doesn't sound very exciting.
Yeah, so not, what we not do to me either. Is,
yeah, we're probeless in our office, except for the oral thermometer. Okay, that's the only probe we do, and it's only oral. So but what we do is we use a simple saliva test. It's been calibrated, and it's been shown that it is a great measure of nitric oxide levels. As you and I have gone around lecturing on hormones and cortisol levels and sex hormones, we know that salivary testing for hormones is a way that you can measure a four-time cortisol. Cortisol is our stress hormone. Highest in the morning, hopefully. It kind of gets our blood sugar going. It's actually how we were designed. And then it drops precipitously and allows us to fall asleep and kind of ease into the evening where melatonin picks up the pace and lets us have a siesta, or as I put, rest, because the first four letters of restore or restoration are rest. So we need to make sure we're getting to sleep. So what's interesting is that we're trying to support the body at each of those levels. And so what we do is we simply measure with a test strip, and then we try to get to the optimal level. It's a nice crimson pink, but not too pink, and not too little, not too much, kind of like Goldilocks. And it's like, okay, well, that bed's too hard. That bed's too soft. So you want to test yourself. And I believe you're going to help your listeners get maybe some access to what I use professionally, the nitric oxide testing, and also what I personally take as I've gotten older, nitric oxide supplementation. Because by doing that, along with a good diet and lifestyle and getting your sleep and going to your doctor and doing all those wonderful things, we have to fuel our body. And without circulation, we have the most beautiful garden. We have nice hair, nice skin, but we have to look at our inners as well. And so many of us, when we used to get together in social gatherings, we can tell whether a person's a little peaked, a little what we term green around the gills up here in Oregon, or ashen. You can kind of tell how a person's looking. So your outside often reflects your inside, but without measuring, you don't know how your insides are doing. That's why we do chemistry panels and look at your liver and all the thyroid panels, because we need to quantify or get a metric, a measurement, so we're not guessing, or as I say, we must test and not guess.
If I could change the subject just a little bit, I found kind of a cool thing as I was looking up nitric oxide, and it came with a picture of a very fit young man who had the legendary six-pack, right? And it was saying that if you don't breathe through your nose, which helps you make lots of nitric oxide, if you're a mouth breather, you won't be able to make nitric oxide as you breathe. So the technique that was being talked about to gain this fabulous body is to tape your mouth, particularly when you sleep, so you continue to breathe through your nose. What do you think about that, Chris?
That sounds like liability to me. Let's see here. Now, if we think of the three monkeys, hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil, I think that would be a great approach, and I think it would be one of those things like, wow,
speak no evil.
That's my own gag order, but the concept of what I think probably the blogger or the person was describing was the concept of positive pressure, and I happen to have lectured and written on the topic of sleep apnea, and so if we're not breathing properly at night or throughout the day, and we're having to breathe through our mouth unduly, and we're not exercising hard, we're just having to breathe through our mouth, we kind of wonder, well, am I getting enough oxygen? And if our tissues aren't getting enough oxygen, there's a process called oxidation, phosphorylation, that we're all familiar with, and it actually is part of also the electron chain transport, or the ETC, and it actually is what makes the ATP. So the concept of breathing and making sure we're breathing is absolutely critical. And I can tell you, I've diagnosed so many people with under-breathing issues. When I say not under-breathing water, but they don't breathe enough. They're not taking those deep diaphragmatic breaths. Mm-hmm. Or even, I've had two women, unrelated, both were 103, 104 pounds. One came in with chronic GI problems. Her belly just always hurt. The other one was constantly anxious and was always seeking different prescription medicines in the benzodiazepine category, like sleeping pills, Valium, cyclobenzaprine, and so forth. So, but in both cases, I ended up diagnosing each of these very thin, petite women with sleep apnea because they were under breathing because everything about them was small, including their airway. And so it's not a heavy thing or a thin thing, though being heavier or having a larger, thicker neck can be a risk factor. Having orthodontic work or having had ear problems or tonsil problems or having allergies as a child all contribute. So the concept that you brought up brilliantly and was actually not what I was planning on talking about is making sure we have enough oxygen, because without oxygen, they are 100% correct. How can you make a nitrogen and an oxygen molecule if you can't get the singlet oxygen to mix it in? Oh, so once again, we have to be breathing. We have to be perfusing ourselves. Otherwise, imagine your hand, and if you were to have a paper cut on your finger, but if someone went to the doctor and they pumped up the blood pressure cuff and never let the blood pressure cuff loose, then your hand would start turning purple. It would start having poor circulation. And that poor circulation would be, once again, a lack of oxygen, of course, mechanically created because of the blood pressure cuff. But if we're under breathing, big problem, a lot of my patients will, if they don't have really great insurance, will use an online home sleep study to see how good or bad their oxygen levels are at night. And in the case of one of my family members, they never snored whatsoever. Even when they had a cold, happened to be a female, when they had a cold, they never snored. What they just did was they underbreathed, and their bedfellow noticed, like, wow. You know, sometimes when we have a significant other, we think, well, they must have got up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. The person had a sense that the person wasn't back. And they were there. They were in the bed physically, but they were so under breathing, their oxygen levels, which should have been around 98%, ideally, were only down to 70. They went down to 77%. They were slowly slipping away. Yeah, and 38,000 people a year minimum die of sleep apnea in their sleep. And so it's like, wow. So doing a home sleep study, but this is also where naturopathic philosophy comes in. We always focus on our food. Food's, of course, important. Eat well. We are what we eat from our head to our feet. 1970s cartoon, by the way. And along with, I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill waiting to be a law, right? And so, and I think it was conjunction, what's your function? So that was when cartoons taught us something.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is food. Well, we can live weeks without food. Even thin people can live weeks without food. Well, water, you can live about 3 days, give or take, without water. How long can we live without optimal air? And that's back to the wisdom, minus the taping the mouth closed. I can't buy into that one because someone did that and they can't breathe through their nose. I guess they're not breathing. We're not breathing. Kind of counter to what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So I'd like to go down another little rabbit hole and come full circle. ED, erectile dysfunction, can be one of the first signs of lower NO, and then the first signs of heart attacks or heart disease. So understanding that circle there is very important as one of the signs that we should be looking at in relationship to our health and not just pass over it. But what I'd like to ask you in our last half of the interview is, what can we do? Now, I do see we discussed some good foods to eat. We discussed about beets and how important they are. We discussed spinach, lots of green vegetables, watercress, and celery also, and watermelon and some nuts. What percentage can that, is there a percentage that we can increase our NO by eating these good foods? Is there a physical activity? Does exercise increase our NO? What can we do in our lives to increase it?
Yeah, and actually a wonderful question. Of course, food is great medicine. And then also in addition to that, what we want to do is we want to look at what else happens as we get older. And one of the things that happens with both men and women is our hormones drop. And testosterone, present in women as well as men, also is very important for inducing nitric oxide levels. But what is the building block for testosterone in the human body? Well, it's HEA, and DHEA goes down through a process called anacinidione to testosterone. But when we get stressed out, we get worn out, often our DHEA levels drop. But one of the most frustrating things and one of the most negative things that my patients believe is, well, it's just part of getting older. So the gentleman or the female with decreased response to intimacy will say, well, that's just part of getting older. But not all of my patients have that problem. So why are some more plagued than others? And this is where genetics comes into play. For example, some of us don't convert folic acid or vegetables into the active form, MTHF, or stands for methylene tetrahydrofolate, as we know. And so we have a defect or a polymorphism, a mutation, if we dare say that word, of our ability. And so we're genetically less able to make the active form of folate to make nitric oxide. So the answer would be it varies from person to person and genetic. That's why some people are very virile and very active without any assistance, male or female alike, with lubrication and performance on intimacy because they have a perfect equation of diet and genetics. Some people that have the double polymorphism, double DNA mutation for MTHFR called 677T, big fancy word, they are only able to convert their vegetables into the active form of folate to make MTHF at about 30 or 40%. So they're kind of behind the eight ball from they really have to eat their vegetables, and they have to eat a lot of vegetables, whereas another person might eat less vegetables and still get away with having good performance across the board, whether it be blood pressure or heart disease and whatnot. So this is where I love doing genetic testing for my patients. But if you're if the audience isn't going to do a genetics test, or they did a genetics test and they found out what their ethnicity is, but I didn't tell them anything about the nitric oxide levels, this is why the salivary test, simple strip you can purchase, measure nitric oxide levels, and you say, okay, well, that's gotten me here, but I want to be more optimal per the test strip. And you're also measuring your symptoms. So there's a saying in medicine that we're all familiar with, treat the patient and not the test. So if blood pressure is better, sexual performance is better, thinking is more clear, okay, circulation is better, hands and feet aren't as cold. And now here in Oregon, where I'm at compared to on the East Coast, we're about the same latitude, Oregon and, let's say, New York. But you folks have sun sooner in the year than we do. But you also have some of the more colder weather than we do. We hardly get any snow in most of Oregon, whereas, you know, on the East Coast, the weather's a little different. And so when we're looking at cold hands and feet, if you're minus 10 degrees or you're in the low teens, yeah, you're going to have cold hands and feet. But if you have cold hands and feet during the rest of the year, circulation again, Raynaud syndrome. And so you want to look at, well, is that a major? Well, my hands aren't as cold as they used to be. But of course, we all know that could also be thyroid. It could be several other things as well.
So you wrote a book that's currently available, Mitral Longevity. And I haven't read it yet, but I imagine it has to do with the health of our mitochondria. So can you tie in NO into the mitochondria where we actually produce those energy molecules, ATP? So how do those two things tie in? And is that the main point of your book, or do you have some other things to add to that?
I have a childhood fascination with how things work. And so when it came to transistor radios back in the day where you actually put batteries in things that were, it's like, wow, okay, well, I have electricity now. This works and that works. So in the case of why did I write Mitolongevity, I wrote it because without enough energy, our genetic potential isn't fueled. This is where we do things like CoQ10, MitoQ, the NAD, and I use a product called nicotinamide riboside, or NR, or True Niagen. But then I also wrote the book because at the same time, without the cells and tissues that make nitric oxide, or as brought up, support the brain and the perfusion, which is the blood and circulation, we're not going to have the ability to go ahead and actually make it. Because if we don't irrigate it, we don't water, we don't bring the nutrients like the arginine and the citrulline or the fermented beet to the tissue that makes the nitric oxide is for naught. It's like having a kink in your garden hose, for lack of a better word. You can have all the pressure, you can have the fanciest, newest garden hose, have a perfect little nozzle, but if you've got a kink in your hose and there's not very good water flow, you're not going to have very good. So we want to have the ability to nourish the mitochondria. And the mitochondria, in the medical literature, and I actually just gave a talk on this, even in the 2020, so recent this year, medical literature talks about how the mitochondria and nitric oxide do a nice little jig together. You have to have enough mitochondria to make nitric oxide. You have to have enough nitric oxide to make and support the mitochondrial energy, that substance called ATP. And this year, I've also done a lot of lecturing about how our natural immune system needs to not only have enough nitric oxide, but it has to have enough of D and zinc and melatonin, and needs to have the ability to control circulation and inflammation. So once again, how it all ties together is that this begets that, that begot this, that begets that. Mm-hmm. That if one little domino kind of, you know, starts becoming weak, then it has a ripple effect amongst all the dominoes.
Well, I think that we are much better informed and we understand quite a bit more about our own circulation and our circulatory health and our brain health and how this little NO molecule relates to every part of our body. So I really want to thank you and thank you for being with us. Dr. Miletus, it's really been incredibly informative.
Well, thank you. And it's an honor and a privilege. Thanks for allowing me to share with your audience. And your audience is so blessed to have you folks educating, empowering, and giving the tools. And if I had a parting word and a thought is we all must take care of ourselves because so many people, whether we realize or not, count on us. And if we don't take care of ourselves, nobody else can or will. So I wish you all a very positive and blessed journey as you pursue wellness and share the information you learned today and throughout all of these broadcasts and radio programs.
Thank you.
Would you like to share your website?
Exactly.
Sure. My website is drmiletus.com. So drmiletis.com. Or you can also get to the same website through my office website called Divine, D-I-V-I-N-E, medicine.com.
Oh, excellent. I just wanted to add that we will be posting this program at our Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol, and any kind of comments would be welcome there. I also have a separate website, thewellnessbydesignproject.com.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'd love to have you back sometime. Now, that was intense. Everything you wanted to know about nitric oxide but didn't know to ask or how it related to you. Well, that was Dr. Chris Miletus. And as you can tell, he's a professor teaching people the understanding of the nitric oxide and what it does to our body, to our brains, to our circulation, and why it's important. But I wanted to end the show talking about something else and a little more basic. So you can put your pens and pencils away or just keep them out just long enough to write down the word bergamot. Now, many of us know that bergamot is the herb or the oil that's put into Earl Grey tea that makes it flavorful, it's pungent, it's more delicious. But what is it? And the next question, and we ask this often, why do I care? The article that I will be quoting from is called How to Balance Your Cholesterol in 30 Days. Well, that's an interesting article. Sounds quite wonderful. It's talking about studies that were done on bergamot in Italy. Two of them. One was over a three-week period with patients or people with elevated cholesterol levels, and what they found after 3 weeks of taking bergamot daily, they found a 29% drop in total cholesterol, and that's just after 4 weeks. I was mistaken. It wasn't three, it's four. So they said, oh, this can't be. You know, there must be a mistake here. So they redid the study with a larger cohort, larger group of people, and redid it exactly the same. And what they found was that with this next group of people, after 4 weeks, they found a 35% drop in total cholesterol. Now, they've never had that kind of response from statins. So I wanted to really look at those statistics a little more carefully. And what they found was that the bad, quote unquote, not as good part of the cholesterol levels dropped 36%. The beneficial good part of the cholesterol, the HDL, went up 40%. And the triglycerides, which are these sticky fats made from sugars, went down 41%. That is dramatic. Way beyond anything we've ever seen with any statin. So what is bergamot? Well, let's talk a little bit about it. It's been used for centuries and very extensively in the 1600s. It's been used as an antidepressant, a calmative. What it is it's an ugly looking orange from, there's in Sicily, southern Europe, southern European areas, and it looks like an orange tree. It is in the orange family, but it never becomes orange. It stays green, and it's got this shriveled up or bumpy rind. And this is where all the oils are. It's in the rind. And so for centuries, they've peeled off the rind, and they've extracted the oil. They do that now with lemons and with oranges. That's the citrus sprays that you see around. But for centuries, they used that in working with patients. They used it as an antiseptic, which they use the orange now as an antiseptic. They use it for fatigue or weakness, memory loss, brain fog. Depression was commonly used for depression, intestinal issues, hormonal imbalances. They use it for lowered libido, numbness and tingling in the fingers and toes, and heart complications. Ironically enough, even then they knew about it. They understood it was heart complications. Now, another study in Bologna, Italy, showed an average of a 29% drop in 4 weeks in total cholesterol. But what they found was bergamot was not only lowering the cholesterol, it was a powerful antioxidant. It had polyphenols with all its nutrient benefits. And in bergamot, there's also remarkable anti-inflammatory and free radical fighting benefits as well. And as if you're taking statins, you're blocking your CoQ10. Well, this does not, which is necessary for the heart muscle to function correctly, well, this does not block CoQ10. As a matter of fact, it supports its action. So the story is even better with this little herb. It's made into capsules, but it's also oil and drops. And it, what they're finding is it balances cholesterol production because it has powerful flavonoids, compounds that work through the liver to block the liver's ability to make more cholesterol. A lot of the cholesterol that we're seeing in the bloodstream is being made by the liver, but this blocks the function of the enzyme that stimulates the production of cholesterol in the liver without any of the side effects. It protects your arteries and with anti-inflammation polyphenols. And so what it's doing is literally neutralizing the free radical inflammation that damages the inner lining of the arteries. And the cholesterol buildup that happens on the arteries is as a direct result of inflammation. So by blocking that inflammation, you're not having that cholesterol buildup. You're reducing the stiffening of the arteries that we see consistent with elevated cholesterol. But it also it has another wonderful benefit. It lowers blood sugar levels. I started utilizing this herb for blood sugar. And what we were finding, very dramatic, very helpful to maintain more balanced blood sugar. Remember, when blood sugar is high, the body then converts that sugar into triglycerides, which are sticky fats, large sticky fats that have difficulty going through the veins, the arteries, the capillaries, because they're so large and so sticky. Well, bringing down the inflammation, bringing down the blood sugar reduces the production of the triglycerides. So you have all of these benefits in this little ugly rind of this orange that we see. It's quite amazing. As far as we know at this point, there's no toxicity to this. And here we've been using it for years. It's been aggressively used since the 1600s with no known side effects. And now we're beginning to study it and understand some of its benefits. So it's bergamot, and there is, it's citrus bergamot, they call it. And the dose of a concentrate is about 8,000 milligrams. So that would be 8 grams right in there, a little less, a little more. And that's in a single capsule. So see if this works for you. Bring this information with you to your healthcare practitioner and see if they'll guide you and watch you and see how it helps. I've posted an article about bergamot on my Facebook page at Corinne Fernari, PACCN, and you can just scroll down. It's right there on the top. And enjoy, and we'll be back next week. Thank you. Bye-bye. So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fernari, RPACCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fernarihealth.com. www.karenfornari.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.